Seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago. But all will be okay, I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast, your favorite podcast that's centered around the maker community. I'm super excited because I have one of my personal role models on the podcast today, somebody that I highly respect on a personal level, not just on the maker level, somebody that I've seen grow rapidly over the last year, and we're going to catch up. He's my friend. He's one of my favorite human beings on planet Earth. I say that about everyone that comes on the podcast, but I really mean it this time. The other times I was joking around. Just kidding. All right. Adam from Beck and Loon, please introduce yourself to the masses in the crowd.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis. I appreciate the intro there. Yeah, my name is Adam. I am the owner of Beck and Loon, and I make leather goods. So hi, everybody. I have been doing this for about a year and a little over, maybe a year and a half, and it's been nothing but a blast, and things have really just, I don't want to say taken off, because I'm still kind of in the growing phase, of course, like we want to be, but it's been nothing but a blast, just learning the process, learning the skills, and going from there for sure.
Awesome. It's been a blast getting to know you on such a personal level and really developing a friendship with you that's very, very consistent. For the listeners of the podcast, you may have remembered the very first episode of the podcast. I was actually talking about Adam in that podcast. We were talking about, I forget the guest, but he was talking about how his friend had a wood shop in his apartment in Boston. And I was talking about Adam, how you have, and I know I misquoted it because we talked about this afterwards, but I said, because I always got to play it up. And just so you guys know, the listeners of this podcast, I try to be the best storyteller that I can. And a good storyteller tells 80% of the truth and 20% of a fabrication. And it's up to you to know what the difference is. So I said that Adam was in a studio apartment, and he had his whole leather shop in the studio apartment, like full blown, built out, like workbench, all of his tools. It's so cool. How much of that is accurate?
Actually, quite a bit of that. I would say that's 100% accurate, Dennis, because that is actually what is going on in my apartment. It is maybe 400 square foot, and I have made it work. My living room is my leather shop. My bedroom has a futon, and that doubles as my bed. And that's also like my, where I watch TV. If I'm watching TV or something or sewing something up, I'll sit down on the futon, but that folds down every night, put my sheets on it, go to bed. I wake up and my workbench is, 2 feet away from me. So it is pretty accurate. It's pretty tight.
That's awesome. You know what? I think that the 20% of the fabrication was, now that I think back on it, I think I said you either sleep on top of your workbench or you put a cot underneath your workbench. So, don't ruin my 80-20 reputation. You know what I mean?
I mean, to be fair, I actually did ponder doing exactly that. So the thought was in my
mind. That's so rad. Talk about dedication, man. You make it happen. And it's so cool because I remember when you put that bench together, and pretty much every single piece that you put into your shop. I think that there's nothing more exciting for leathersmiths than seeing your friends, your peers, your colleagues get new tools or build out a shop. I know when I was building out my shop, man, like everyone was so excited for me. I felt so good. And now one of our mutual friends, Trevor, is building out a shop, a basement shop, I think. And everyone's just rooting them on. And it's so exciting, man.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, it was so fun getting to watch you just in your process of building that shop out, just with, you know, putting the shed in the backyard or building the shed, getting it fabricated, painted and everything, getting the counters up there. And then the classic like hole in the bench where you can just sweep off all your dust and everything.
That's still one of my favorite features of the shop, is because I use it all day, every day. Like, I'm working on my workbench. If I'm sanding, if I'm beveling edges, if I'm cutting leather and it's not big enough to keep, if it's smaller than the size of a key fob, I toss it. If it is at that size or bigger, I throw it into a little scrap pile, and I make all of my keychains out of my scraps. Try to keep waste down to a minimum. And I'm so grateful for it. And I think the one thing that was so exciting for me is that I have no experience in any kind of building like that whatsoever. Like, we put up the drywall, or the insulation and drywall. I mudded the whole thing. Like, I put the flooring in. My friend Ben from Condorosa Woodworks, I think it is, Condorosa Creations, he was a guest on this. He helped me cut out the tabletops, the bench tops. Other than that, I did absolutely everything. And man, I have no ideas. Like, I always joke around about myself, like, I have super soft hands because I don't ever swing a hammer. And even the hammers that I use now, I wrap in leather. Like, everything is like, I put grips on absolutely everything, because I just don't want, I just don't want calluses, even though I get it from stitching. But yeah, man, it's so exciting to see people put it together and re-experience that feeling of building a shop through other people, especially when you really like the person. Like, and that seems to be the overall vibes amongst the leather community, is that I've felt a little bit of jealousy a couple different times for different things, but not amongst the people that I spend much time with, that's for sure. Yeah. So, quick question for you. I know you're going to college to do with something with wildlife. How does, first two-part question, what is it exactly that you're hoping to do? And maybe you could elaborate more about your love and passion for nature and wildlife, and also how that plays a role in your leather work.
Yeah, those are good questions. I guess we'll start with, I've been going to school for natural resources. My degree is a natural resource technology degree, which is a fancy way of saying that it's got a pretty broad spectrum of skills that I will be learning throughout that degree, with like technology-based systems and it all relates to nature. So it's a very wide spectrum of things, from aquatic life to birds to reptiles and amphibians and just all of it. And that's been a lot of fun, and I've just become really passionate about it. I've always really enjoyed the outdoors, and so that's been something in the back of my mind. And then this summer I am working at a state park with the DNR here in Minnesota, as a park naturalist. So I lead programs educating the public on natural resources and why they're important, and getting people outdoors. So the thing that I really care about, and if you've known me for a while, which you have.
All of this is not new to me. It's just new to the audience, because and
absolutely,
it's so cool, because I remember when all of this was taking place and how excited all of us were for you. So, and I didn't mean to cut you off, but you're absolutely right. This is something that, like, it's not just about what kind of glue or sewing machine that we buy. It's about what happens in our personal life too, that kind of brings us together. And I'm equally as excited and happy and proud of you now as I was the moment that you shared that with everyone.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So how that all plays a role into my leather work is, my biggest thing is getting the people to understand why natural resources are important. And I just want people to be able to pick up a wallet or a tote bag or a clutch or something like that and say that this is more than just a fashion statement. It's, you know, it's an understanding of the natural resources and things like that. So I try my best to name all of my products after things that I enjoy in nature, whether that's my wallets, which are all named after birds, or my tote bags, all named after mammals, and so on and so forth. So I take that as a really cool learning or a teaching opportunity to, when I make that sale, say, hey, this is why this is named that. And here's a personal story with that and why I named it that. And it just creates a really cool way to have a conversation, which I think in turn helps me make a sale.
Yeah, of course. People are buying you more than they're buying your product. They're buying your personality. Question for you related to that. When you produce literature for each one of your products, are you incorporating that story of why you named each product or information about the particular animal within the literature that you produce for each product?
That is still a work in progress. If you look on my website, there is a little bit about each one, but even things like my Puma tote, which is my largest tote that I make, I think it just says something about, you know, it being such a striking and ferocious predator, and it's an eye catcher. So that's kind of what I included in that. But no, I guess I would say that not every product has like that quick little fact or something like that. But it is definitely a work in progress.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's cool. And that's something that's unique to you that you could really kind of, that you can tap into, is bringing that side out of you. You know what I mean? Like the, cause that's your character, like your fascination with all of this stuff, where I don't have the same fascination. It wouldn't make sense for me to do it. And I think that there are enough people out there that are really, really intrigued by, like, I love nature and I like, you know, outdoors and all of that kind of stuff. But I also don't know, you know, everything that you do about these particular animals or trees or plants or all of these things, where it's kind of second nature, and it's your personality within the descriptions or why you name certain things. And I just find it fascinating. I think it would be personally really beneficial to you to incorporate that stuff. You know, you've recently, a couple months ago, switched from hand stitching to a machine, correct?
I did. Yeah.
So my question is, how has that benefited you? Is it just time management? Do you prefer the stitch lines from the sewing machine or hand stitch? What are some of the differences, both the pros and cons? Because I know that that's something of controversy, lighthearted controversy. I don't mean real controversy, but like, it's something that people sure. debate often, the, you know, the time saved compared to the overall appearance of hand stitching, and the pros and cons of each one of them. And I'm curious to know what your thoughts are about it.
Yeah. So it was an interesting transition for me. It's something that I always wanted to get, because I always like having some nice toys and things. I probably had no business getting it at that point in time, but I said, by golly, you know what, I'm going to do it. Cause at that time I had gotten a really cool deal with a boutique, and I thought, okay, like, they're going to be making sales, I need to be pumping out products. So I started doing that. And the research that I had done beforehand was things like, oh, it's a finer looking stitch, it's a little more elegant looking. Of course, that's personal preference to the people that were coming up with that. And I guess I was finding a little bit of that too. I really like the look of the sewing machine stitch. I mean, don't get me wrong, I really love the my Cinebrooks hand punches, and they have been just a treat to work with, and I still love working with those. But yeah, I really do enjoy sewing with the machine. I think it just adds, well, I mean, for instance, I shaved off 3 hours, no, more than that. I used to make a tote bag in about 12 hours, and now I can make it in about 3.5 with the sewing machine. So that's pretty cool. So things like straps and stuff like that, if I can help it, I really want to do that with the sewing machine. Or belts, I'd love to be punching out more belts and things in the future. And that really wouldn't be possible without the machine for sure.
Yeah, I can see how that cuts down on so much time. And because it cuts down on time, you can lower your cost on each product. I totally get that. And I think that the average person, just like I don't think the average person, we've talked about this in a couple previous podcasts. Like, I don't think the average person knows the difference between a name brand like Horween or Wicked and Craig, or, you know, the list goes on, that kind of leather, just like most people don't know the difference between machine stitched and hand stitched until they see hand stitched, because they don't see that often. But when you, and you could probably agree with this, when you've made a product for someone, or you're at a family function and you tell people what you do, or they see something that you made, I feel in my experience, people are really kind of taken back by the hand stitching and how much difference it really is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I always got a kick out of people when I would tell them what I do, and they'd find out and they'd be like, man, your hands must be really strong. Like, they really don't know that we pre-punch and everything like that. So that's always funny. Just time and time again of that. But yeah, I absolutely agree. And I do think the hand stitching is a way stronger product. You know, it's going to hold up a lot better. So I think and this is something in the work yet, and we can talk about this later too, but I want to push out some more outdoorsy products, because right now my line is mostly women's products, and I do want to do more outdoorsy type stuff that's like helpful when you're camping or just being outdoors in general. So that being said, I think those products I'm going to hand sew, because I just think it's just that much stronger.
I think that that's a good idea, until at least the first ones where you can actually product test them and do some research and development. And, you know, maybe it's something in the future, if you get a lot of orders, you're able to, you know, get the right needles and the right thread for your machine. Because I know what you have, it's an industrial style machine that can get through what you need and use a bigger needle and bigger thread. With that said, it kind of leads me into the next question that I have for you, or a conversation, I guess, I would like to have with you, because I think we're a bit different on this, or, you know, maybe we're not. But when you make products, are you making like a, do you go by batches and build up inventory, and then do like a dump on your website, or advertise it through social media, or, you know, Etsy and stuff like that? Or do you make it, you don't make the order until the person orders it from you, then you know exactly, okay, I'm making this one product, then I ship it out, then until I get my next order, I'll work on a few prototyping things. Like, how does that look like to you, I guess?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So honestly, I would say it really varies on the season. Right now, I'm hitting a pretty slow season personally, mostly because I'm pushing my natural resource career. You know, I'm doing that internship, that's full time. And then I have some other Army Reserve stuff going on as well. So that's keeping me plenty busy. And so I haven't had a ton of time to do any shows because I'm working weekends, et cetera. So to answer your question, right now it's basically made when they're ordered. But at other times I'll make five of one thing so I can have an inventory with a chance that I'll make the sales. But I would say from this point, I am still really, really trying to figure out the demographics of my my market and pushing social media and stuff like that. So I'm not generating a ton of sales at this point in time. So there's some things that I need to maybe retweak and work. But I would say, yeah, for the most part, it's, you know, I might have like 3 or 4 wallets of one style made and maybe 3 or 4 of another, but it's not like a huge batch order or anything like that.
Right. I think that what you're going through as far as it being slow, from my understanding and from the people that I talk to, that's pretty universal. I think it's so easy for us to beat ourselves up and think like, man, maybe people don't like my products. Maybe I should adjust. Maybe it's this. We're human beings. So that's the natural thing. I do it all. You know, I do it all of the time. Like, I'm so self-conscious. It's so weird because I'm so confident in so many aspects, but I'm also I'm also a little bit, I have my hangups and I think like, well, what am I doing wrong? And you're not doing anything wrong. You're not doing anything wrong. The people that are listening to this podcast that, you know, run a small business or they do it as a hobby and they're not getting orders right now. You're not doing anything wrong. And I mean, you could be doing something more right, I think, in the sense of kind of shifting for the seasons. I'm doing that for the first time this year by doing sandals, and they're doing good for me and I'm happy. And I got to make a product that I don't feel is worth, I don't charge as much as I think they're worth for material cost and time, but it keeps me busy and it keeps my products getting out there. And it's something that I really enjoy doing. But even selling my sandals at $150, I should, based on material cost and time, I should be charging probably closer to $200. But who spends $200 on a pair of sandals? You can't really make that yet, at least. Maybe I will in the future, but I think it's all about adjusting and at the same time really not beating ourselves up, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Those sandals, by the way, I might have to pick up a pair. I'm not typically a sandal guy, but those are really sweet.
I'm not a sandal guy either, Adam, to be honest with you. Like, I don't like open toe shoes at all. Like, I'm not that guy, but I made them just because I wanted to challenge myself. You're aware of this. Our close group of friends are aware of it. I do a thing on Sundays called Selfish Sundays where I just make myself something or someone that I love that I can give out that's really either really challenging or it's really utilitarian for me, like building a sheath for a knife or whatever, just something I can kind of get in and do. And I decided I just wanted a pair of sandals. We got a couple vacations this summer. Me and the wife are going to go on a cruise and I'm like, I should make some sandals. And I got to be honest with you, man, the first pair that I made for myself, I ended up selling them before I even got to wear them. Then I made a whole nother batch and I wore them for the first 2 days. And I'm like, there's no way I can sell these, man. They're like so stiff. I got blisters. Then I started soaking them every time that I watered the backyard and they wet molded to my feet. And now, hands down, the most comfortable sandals that I've ever worn. I put like neoprene padding in between the layers. So it's like you're wearing the Nikes of like sandals. Yes. And they're built like tanks. They're so like substantial and so stiff that they'll last you year after year after year and only get better as you wear them. You know how sandals are. They're one of the, it's like boots, you know, like especially good. And it's all 100% leather. I'm using all like the best materials available. And man, I can't wait to get done with this pair because I'm going to be carving and painting up a pair. And I did one in the past and I love it, but like these ones, I'm stoked. I'm so excited. And I thank you. Hit me after we record this and let me know what we could do. Cause I'll make sure that it's well worth it to you to pick up a pair. I'd love to do a pair for you. It'd be awesome.
Yes. Yes. I would be honored. And I would absolutely love to purchase a pair for you from you. Cool. So we'll make that happen.
I love it. I was not expecting to get a sale out of this podcast, but you know, always on that grind, always hustling.
That's right. That's right.
I love it so much. Well, we're going to take a really quick break for the ad break, and we'll be back here shortly. So stick around. Hey guys, welcome back to Monday Motivation Podcast. Again, we have one of my best friends in the whole world, Mr. Adam of Beck and Loon, one of my favorite leather crafters and all around people. I know I say that about everyone, but I really like Adam. So thank you for being part of the podcast today, my friend.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. This is really just a treat. I mean, you're a busy man, and it's just a treat when I get the opportunity to chat with you and hear a little bit about yourself. And it's just fun, just shooting the crap and just having a good time.
Absolutely. That's what has been probably one of the most beneficial things for me about leather in general is the friendships that I've made. I know when I'm isolating myself too much, and when I need to get back to my friend group, which can happen at times, I've been kind of going through this lately, where I'm so busy that I don't have the small talk that I appreciate, enjoy so much, whether it's with our community group or other community groups that I'm a part of. And I just don't keep up with it. And then time passes and, then I feel like I'm kind of out of the conversation, or I just jump in to post a photo or ask a question, and then I duck out and I'm like, dude, I feel so selfish because of this. Like, but I just like, I'm trying to juggle so many things. Like, I don't think people understand the amount of effort goes into producing a podcast for our community. There's a lot. Like today I'm recording two podcasts. Tomorrow I'm recording a podcast, and on Friday I'm recording two podcasts. Then I got to edit all of those. So, and I'm not complaining because I'm not going to do anything I don't want to do. I do enjoy doing it, but, I need to focus more in on spending time with my friends, you guys, it matters so much to me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely sympathize with you there, talking about, you know, stepping away, doing your own thing, isolating yourself and getting away from the group for a little bit. And that's really tough. And I can sympathize because I'm in the same boat where I get a ring from Clubhouse saying, hey, everybody's chatting online and I want nothing more than just to chat with y'all. But I just can't with the work that I'm doing. If it was any other job where I'm not in the public eye working for the state government, yeah. I would totally get on and chat with you guys, because that would look so bad.
That last little bit is so hilarious to me. Like, and if I wasn't working for the U.S. government, you know, any other thing, like, it would be totally fine. But you know, that could be a problem. Do you, as a, I mean, you're kind of like a fancy park ranger, right? Like, or an educator within the park system, correct?
Yeah. So without getting too complicated and making this too much about that, but and I'm still learning like all of the different things, because I have a park ranger that is my park supervisor, but somebody that I work directly under is called a naturalist. And she is the expert on everything nature. So we're the ones actually throwing the programs. He's the one that's that is like managing the park, just making sure everything's running smoothly and communicating with, you know, the state officials and things like that. But we're boots on the ground doing the dirty work, talking to the families and things like that.
That sounds awesome. Do you get a company golf cart?
No, I actually get a big old GMC truck.
That's so bullshit. That's kinda nice. I'm quitting. Golf cart or nothing. I'm out of here.
Yeah. That's mostly because we have, so I work at technically two state parks. So we drive, it's about a half an hour between the two. And we run programs at both, and oftentimes I'll need to transport stuff with them.
That sounds awesome. And I know you said you didn't want to focus on that too much, so I'll kind of abruptly lead into the next topic, which I think is a super important one. And because it relates to every single one of us, I'm assuming, unless you're the CEO of a massive, massive company. But what do you feel is the big difference when we work with small makers compared to big box stores or massive corporations that sell the same products as we do? What do you think is the difference, the pros and cons of each one?
Oh boy. I would honestly say, Dennis, that we could have a podcast that lasts 24 hours just chatting about this specific topic. And I know you can sympathize with that. There's so much to talk about. But the things that I had in mind when I was preparing for this podcast was things like the quality. It goes way up when you work with single, small, or not necessarily just single makers, but very small business owners and things like that. And then another huge one for me is, I guess it kind of ties into quality too, but there's like an expectation for that quality as well. But it also allows you to connect with your maker as well. And I think the personal stories that each one of us bring is just really incredible that we can bring to the table or to the workbench, so to speak. And I think that's really important. And, you know, why would you support a company that's, you know, all about fast fashion and using the cheapest materials possible? Like your quality goes way down, and it's just kind of a disappointment because that's just what we've been fed for years and years and years. So trying to convince people to make that purchase of maybe the little more expensive thing, it's a challenge, but it is worth it, and it's fun. So I hope that answers a little bit. There's more I want to talk about on that, but I'll let you jump in.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The more I study economics, and the more I come to understand late stage capitalism, my opinion changes on capitalism as a whole, even though being a small business, and I get called out on this all the time because I get in conversations with people that are very, very pro capitalism and very, very pro, like, you know, free market. And if a CEO makes $80 billion in 1 year, that's because they work hard and they deserve that. When if you just look, it's because they're capitalizing on labor just as much as costs and all of that stuff. And we see, you know, the labor force getting paid junk while inflation goes up, all of those things. And that's not what this conversation is about, but it's something that I struggle with personally as a small business owner, because I am a capitalist by nature because of what it is that I'm doing. And I don't know. It's tricky because I get called, people will be like, oh, well, you have any kind of an issue with that word, capitalism, people call you out. Oh, you're a business owner, so don't you want to be a millionaire? Don't you? And I'm like, yeah, sure I do, but I don't want to exploit, labor or people and make them, you know, work themselves into a ground. I'm getting to the point where I want to take on an apprentice at the very least, if not like a part-time employee. And to me, what's the most important thing is making it worth it for them. Like, I don't want to just rip people off. And when we go to work for someone else, we are exchanging our time for money. It's an exchange. It's a good for a service that we're providing, whatever that company is. And sure, we agree to it when we go in and we negotiate our salaries or our hourly pay. But I hope, in even when I've hired people for small tasks, I make sure that I pay them well, or I don't do it. I'll just carry that work on myself. And Yeah, it's kind of a left field tangent that I just went on, but it's something that I'm super, super passionate about. And even, you know, we've talked before, and I'm sure anyone that's a leather crafter that listens to this has had this experience, especially when you get to a certain like follower count on Instagram. All of a sudden, these companies from, you know, Bangladesh or, you know, mostly India, in my experience, they contact you and they want to produce your products. And I joke around about it because I like wasting their time so they don't scam other people. And that's one of my hobbies, is just trying to waste scammers' time as much as possible. I love it, and I screenshot it and I send it to my friends. So if you're a scammer, mm-hmm. you know it's going to these people. So what I
that's
do
right.
is
that's right.
I tell them like, hey, I would, you know, I'd love to work with you, but I need to see the working conditions for the people, and I need to know what they're getting paid to make my products. And they send me a couple photos of the warehouses they're working in. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, I need to come there and see who's producing it and how they're treated and what kind of you know, how long of breaks they're allowed to take, like how many hours a day are they working? Are you giving them, you know, any kind of benefits? Otherwise, I don't want to work with you. You know, that's what's important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think that was a tangent necessarily at all. One thing that came to mind is like, how many times have you bought like a bag of chips or something else where it didn't quite meet your expectations, where it's like half full, you know, you didn't quite get exactly what you wanted or what you were expecting from wish.com or whatever. You know, that kind of stuff does not happen with us little makers. And if it does, we do everything in our right to make it right.
We absolutely do, because if Doritos gets a bad review on their chips, that's a drop in the bucket. If we get a bad review or a bad reputation amongst our clients, that is, I know for me, a lot of my clients are return customers, which is, I think, the best compliment that you can get in general for any business. But if you wreck that that relationship, it has long lasting effects on your business and your reputation and your integrity. Like, you have to live with yourself. And I've lost a lot of money by doing the right thing. Doing the right thing is very expensive in the short term, but it's very profitable in the long run, I think.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I've had plenty of those instances in my own personal walk as well. One in particular, which we'll touch on in a bit here, but things like just a product wasn't quite what the customer expected. They said, can we do it in a different color? And I said, yeah, sure. So I took it back because it wasn't quite what they expected. So I said, absolutely, let's make it right. Let's make sure that you're well pleased and happy with your product. So yeah, I definitely
they sent
feel
it
you.
Back to you?
It hurts in a short time. They did. Yeah, they did. Which isn't necessarily the case, but
That's actually, I mean, that's kind of cool because you can keep it for your inventory as long as they didn't wreck it and it's still in good condition. You can sell it. My issue is everything I do is hyper custom. So if there's any hangup, there's no like, there don't send it back, or you know what I mean? Like it can be really hard. Or if I work with a company to do a logo on their stuff, no one's ever really sent anything back. My issue always comes from the stupid, you know, USPS. They're horrible, probably the worst government agency that we have. And you might want to talk to them now that you work for the government, you know, give a shout out and be like, look, you need to step up your program. And I know you got connections with USPS, so maybe you could help us all out. And they're the worst, absolutely the worst. And what my problem is I send out a package, it says it's still waiting to be shipped. 2 weeks later, it still says that, and my clients are upset. So I remake the order. Then the day that I ship out their new order, the first order gets there. And I'm like, dude, I just wasted 2 days and hundreds of dollars on products plus the shipping cost. And then they get two full orders. And there's no point in them sending it back to me because I don't need a collection of keychains with a movie logo on it. Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to sell it down the road anyways because it's licensed to them. Like, I'm not trying to get sued.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to get sued about that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really tough. I know you've been having a lot of issues with that. I have not. Oh, I did have one. I did have one instance, but I remade them quick. And luckily it was nothing like that. It was a set of coasters that got lost one time. Not a whole beautiful wallet.
Did the original order ever get shipped to them or shipped back to you?
I never got anything. Never got them.
Freaking UPS or USPS.
Gotta love it. Yeah. One thing that I wanted to touch on, which I think is a really cool thing, and I kind of brushed it off when I originally said it, but something that I think is really important with the small business owners versus the big ones is that personal story that each one of us bring. And I think that's super cool because you can see it on our social media or our websites and things like that. And one thing that's been just really cool to hear for me personally is your story. And today being your second year of sobriety, which is just absolutely phenomenal. Congrats on that.
Thank you so much. Cool, it means a lot to me. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's very much at the core of my story because I started doing leather work right at the tail end of a very long bender. And if people don't know what bender means, it means heavy drug use and heavy alcohol use and for long periods of time. And, you know, I was doing leathercraft as a time to, you know, as a thing to pass time, but it also, I started mixing alcohol and drugs with that experience and my work was absolute garbage. And, I was so distracted, in the actual, you know, getting fucked up that I couldn't pay attention to what it was that I was doing. And I finally, I mean, it was bad, Adam, at the end. Like I was drinking a fifth of whiskey or a box of wine every single day and, you know, chopping up and snorting Xanax. And I don't know if you've had experience with that stuff. You don't take me as someone that is. You seem pretty leveled out. But it's bad, man. People die really easy, especially off of like street Xanax. Like there's a lot of fentanyl going around. And mixing that with alcohol is like one of the number one ways to overdose. And I'm very fortunate that I was able to detox. I went out to Huntington Beach to my mom's house for like 6 days. I didn't sleep for 6 days straight, which if you ever had a time where you don't sleep for that long, you start hallucinating and it becomes really, really scary. You start hearing whisperings of your name and you start seeing things and it was all bad. And I finally went to the hospital because I thought I was gonna die. And I was able to kind of work through that stage. And that was the last time that I drank or used anything. And I was able to stick with it. And it was a very, very, it's still a work in progress and it'll always be a work in progress. And, you know, there might be a day that I slip up, but I know consciously in my head that, it's a long-term solution now of sobriety for the rest of my life. And, you know, I've had friends really close to me, and this is important to the people that are listening that go through addiction, that if you make it, you know, 2 days or 3 months or 16 years and you have any kind of slip up, don't don't start all over. Don't think that you like, don't shame yourself into thinking like, oh man, I lost those 3 weeks or those 6 months or those 20 years of sobriety. I might as well, you know, I'm already a pile of shit. I might as well just get back on it. Don't do that. Just start the next day. Just be sober the next day and mm-hmm. be sober the following day. But because of that experience, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because today is 2 years. And one of the things that I've learned through therapy is to make an occasion of these milestones, whether that was 6 months, I made a big deal about that. 1 year, I made a big deal about that. Now at 2 years, I'm making a big deal about it, because that's we have to encourage ourselves, because not many other people will do that. And yeah, man, it's offered me a lot of opportunities to talk to people within the leather community that also struggle with addiction and feel comfortable reaching out to me. And I've been able to help quite a few people, and I still check up on people from a year and a half ago, like, hey man, how are you struggling? You know, or how are you doing? Oh man, I'm still struggling with meth. Like, a lot of people, believe it or not, use methamphetamines to help them get more work done within the leather shop. And naturally, I would never, ever, ever name names, but there's people that we know that do that, and they feel like they can't take that substance out of their life because they feel like they won't be able to perform within leathercraft the same way, or they won't be able to get as much work done as they do. And, you know, I've had long conversations with those people, and I never intend to put them down. I just try to do a lot of listening. And it's another tip too. If you have a family member or a friend that's struggling, don't give up on them. Just don't talk. Don't talk. Just listen. Like, those people don't want to be told strategies on how to get off of alcohol, or, you know, just drink one less beer every day until you're off drinking beer, or do one less, you know, pill every single day until you wean yourself off. It's not going to work, man. What works is shutting the fuck up and just listening. That's the answer. Like, and just letting, reminding people that you love them, you know, and setting boundaries. If they steal from you, they're out, you know, like, whatever your personal boundaries are, set those and stick to them. But just try to listen to people is the best advice, because that's what's helping me got through this. People like Adam, like you, you know, there's milestones that I've shared with a handful of people within our community, and the encouragement that I get, it helps. It really helps. Like, the congratulations, as corny as it is, we live off of those things, and it's okay to, whatever it takes to, like, better yourself, do whatever it takes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so cool, Dennis. And I really appreciate you sharing that with everybody. I can tell you I'm telling the crowd here this. Dennis is the guy that's going to check up on you a year and a half from now, 2 years from now. He's the guy. He's the real one. He's genuine, not in the sense that genuine leather is genuine.
good plug and, for the next topic. I love it. You're a pro, Adam.
But genuine in the sense that he truly does care. He is one of the most incredible individuals I've gotten the pleasure of meeting, and just having that niche to be able to have people come in and talk to you has really, really been so cool to hear about. And also for me, I've chatted with you a couple times too, not necessarily on that topic, but just in other sort of struggles. You're there day in and day out, even with your crazy busy schedule.
Yeah. You know, I try to be, and that's like, I love that you bring up the story side, like, people sharing as much of their story as they're comfortable with. I mean, there's two particular topics that I feel very comfortable and very free in talking about, and that's addiction and mental health issues, which are very, very hard topics to discuss. But I feel like I have a debt of gratitude to other people to share my experiences and hoping to help them. And on the topic of story, you had mentioned, like, it's really good to be able to share your story. I'm so blessed and so happy that I have the opportunity to share these stories through this podcast. And I get to hear the stories. I get to have the stories with people where these kinds of stories is what draws your fan base or your personal community around your business in. So I encourage everybody that has something that they feel comfortable talking about or having an outreach around to share those things, because like you, Adam, you have such an understanding and appreciation for wildlife, and you try to incorporate that into your business. It doesn't have to be over dramatic with, oh man, you know, I'm a suicide survivor, or suicide attempt survivor, or whatever thing. It doesn't have to be that dramatic. It just has to be genuine, and it has to be who you are. And it's okay also to separate your personal life. Like I have, you know this because you're a close friend of mine, but I have issues with my family. Like there's ongoing things, like there's heavy, heavy things that are happening today that I'm not going to share on the podcast, that I'm not going to share on my social media, because there has to be a balance and there has to be a separation. And I don't feel comfortable sharing that stuff. You personally off air, Adam, I would share it with in a heartbeat. But if you make yourself too available on social media, people can easily take advantage of that and use it against you. And it makes you kind of vulnerable. And if you push yourself out of your comfort zone in a negative way, you'll resent yourself later for the things that you say. You got to be accountable for the things that you say now in 20 years from now, because they could come back to bite you in the ass that far down the road. So I'm particular about what I share. And if there is anyone that is listening now, you can reach out through DMs, through my Instagram, my Facebook, my TikTok, whatever it is. And I'll be there as much as you let me be there. You know, it's hard sometimes, you know?
Yeah, Dennis, I think you bring up a really good point there. Having that line, that definitive line between work and personal lives. I have really struggled with that. For example, my workshop is literally back behind me as we're speaking here. And so when I wake up, it's just so, you know, so tempting to just get right in that rather than like going and eat breakfast quick. Like you gotta, you're just so tempted to do that. And then even in my natural resource job that I'm currently working, I got in trouble the other day. She was like, "Hey, you need to be working 40 hours and then you need to go home and enjoy your life." I'm just like, but I'm having so much fun here. But yeah, there is that distinction that needs to happen. And it's a daily conscious effort to do so.
It's so relatable in what you said, that your shop is right, you know, four steps away from where you sleep. It's easy to wake up and want to get right to work and get in a few hours before or after you get home from work. And I struggle with that so much because I wake up at 5 every single morning. I take a shower, I make a cup of coffee, and before I even wake up completely, I'm out in my shop either filming a live, filming a podcast, you know, working on a project that I'm creating a story around. And this last time that we went to go visit family in Atlanta, I had a long conversation with myself, and I'll be honest, where it stems from is I saw photos and video of me playing with my wife's niece and nephew, and I was really embarrassed how much like weight I had gained. And I've always wrote it off as an excuse, like, man, well, I got to get to work. Like my morning hours are my most productive. Like I need to get to work. Like, I don't know when I'm going to be able to find a time to work out, or at least go for a walk and, you know, do some like push-ups and sit-ups. And I'm the type of person where if I set a date, and I know this doesn't work for a lot of people, but if I set a date a week out to do something, I mentally prepare myself and I'm like, okay, I got 4 days, I got 3 days, I got 2 days. Okay, tomorrow when I wake up, this is the new plan. And I know how to calculate in my head how to create a positive habit. And that's just doing it between 22 days and 30 days straight. And then your body can't go without it. It's addiction. I'm still an addict. Like, it's just, I've substituted one thing for another. So when we got back the next day, it was just like, okay, I'm going to go for a walk. And we live on a really steep hill, and it's like a half a mile up and a half a mile down. I'm like, okay, I'm going to start every morning doing that, and I'm going to do it once every evening. And so I did that now. And my wife does it in the evening after we eat dinner. We take the dogs, and it's a good time for us to talk and reconnect as a partnership and as a couple. And it's been so rewarding. I do push-ups. It's a good way to, we have a little fat dog and get her a little skinny too. So we're doing it as a little family, and it's awesome. But to prioritize yourself, whether it's your mental health, your physical health, it's gonna improve your workflow. I've already feel my energy levels go up. I'm able to work longer without being like, all right, I'm gonna eat a big old heavy lunch and then take a nap and then I'll get back to work. I'm like, no, I've already worked out this much. Like, I'm gonna eat something light so I don't have to work these calories off later. And I feel better already. And I hope that's encouraging to the people that put too much. I think Adam knows better than anyone. I put such extreme pressures on myself. It's okay, man. Like, it's okay to treat yourself. Take a day off. You know, you mentioned you had just gotten back from, I don't know if we mentioned this at the break or whatever, but like, you mentioned you took 2 days off to go fishing with your dad. And that's the best thing that you can do for productivity sometimes is don't work. Don't work and watch what happens when you come back 2 days, 4 days, a week afterwards, and you'll see how much faster you are at what it is that you do. If you're like a leather nut like we are, you're going to play out the next three projects in your head over those 2 days that week. So when you get back, you have everything mapped out and you're so productive in doing that. Try it. Try it out. It's awesome.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. I can say that from a personal perspective for sure. And then even things like you were saying, you get up at 5 every day. I get up at like 5:30, 6 o'clock sometimes if I'm feeling really lazy. But I go to bed earlier and I wake up, and you know, when I am doing leather work or whatever, I'm like, okay, these are my productive hours. And then by that 2:30, 3:30 p.m. lull that you experience, I think to myself, it's like there's like a mental thing that happens where it's like, well, you got up early to be productive, so keep being productive. And I don't know what it is, but that has weirdly like kept me going. And
I absolutely totally agree with that. And it's always that time that I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna chill for a little bit. I'll come across like a video on YouTube or TikTok, like right as I'm like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, just chill for an hour or two. Maybe I'll take a nap. Something will come, like what's his name? Gary V video will come on and be like, grind harder, harder, hurt. I'm like, you motherfucker. Like, okay, I'll get up. Like, why are you talking to me like that, you jerk? And then I'll come out. But I think in the same token, which I totally agree, like being productive is good until it's not good. And it's like, it's actually holding you back. And that's a complete personal thing. There is no answer, like no universal answer. You know, you have to know when, okay, man, like I'm getting less done now than if I were to go take a nap. Like, I don't think that anyone could say that I'm lazy at this point, like anyone that knows me. So if I take a little siesta or I take a day off to spend with my wife, or we're planning to go on a cruise here soon. So if I take 7 days off to go hang out on a cruise ship in the Mexican Riviera, I earned it. I can do that. You know what I mean? Because I'll work 16 hours a day when I get back because I missed it that much. And you know, they're just do as much as you want to do. Like, this is leather work. It's not, you know, we got into it to make ourselves happy. So remember that happiness, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good point for sure. And yeah, you can only do things for so long before you burn yourself out completely. So getting out and doing the things that you really enjoy doing outside of maybe leather work or whatever you're working for, take that time to enjoy yourself too, and rest as well, because rest is a huge, huge key component. I mean, look at the Europeans, like they have so much time off and they're productive.
Yeah, I love the Europeans, except the Eastern Europeans. They scare me. Have you ever seen Hostel, the movie?
I can't say I have.
Well, don't watch it. I could tell you the whole premise, but it's boring to explain that on a podcast. But yeah, I always joke about my roommate for a long time when I lived in Long Beach was Eastern European. And I always tell him how there's two things I can't trust. People that eat lettuce on their hamburgers or their burritos, because warm, crispy water is not cool. Then Eastern Europeans. Those are the only two things that I don't mess with. And I've stuck to it. So that's how it goes. Hey, I want to ask you some questions, and I hope you can spread some knowledge, because I am extremely ignorant when it comes to different grades and different types of leather. I know the difference between vegetable tan leather and chrome tan leather. And I know that there's a lot of people out there, and there's a place for and a utility for chrome tan leather. I don't use it at all. I find it really hard to hand stitch, and that's what I primarily do. And I like really, really stiff leather. If you guys order leather online, a lot of websites will have a tab where it says firmness. I like extra firm. That's what I pretty much make all of my leather goods with. But I want to pick your brain on some of that stuff, because even if you're not, I know before we went into the break, I said that you were, you know, you had a PhD and you were an expert in all things leather, even though you aren't, and I'm, you know, I like gassing up my friends. I can guarantee you're more knowledgeable. Can you kind of share some of the things that you know in the different grades of leather with me personally, and also the audience that's listening?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. And I can speak on that because I was in the same place as a lot of people that were getting into leather, where they're just confused as all get out when it comes to, oh, you should get this leather, you should do this type, or you should use this thickness, or there's so much going on. You know, the general public, when they expect a product from you, it's like, okay, I need three different hides to make this one product for you. And I try to explain that to people, where they're like, well, can you do this color and this and do this? It's like, well, that's just to make this one thing for you that maybe is going to cost about $50 for me to sell it. I'd have to spend $750.
Yeah, that's the truth.
It's just crazy. So having that is really fun to try to explain that. So that's been kind of a personal journey for me. And I started with a lot of YouTube videos and just a lot of forums and stuff that I would read, where I'm learning all the tempers of the leathers and the pliableness and the tannages and, you know, your faux leathers and your vegan leathers and stuff like that too. We'll loop them all into this whole thing, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I exclusively use at this time Wicked and Craig bridal leather, which is a vegetable tanned leather. They're so consistent. I used to use Herman Oak. That's what I got into when I first started. And at that point in time, before inflation, those hides were about $220 for a whole hide. And I was dyeing them myself. So I was spending $20 on, you know, dye and countless hours making that look somewhat good. I look at the products back that I made then and think, I shudder. But
that's important, though. It's important to look back at those. I think it's the best thing we can do.
I agree. And so I looked at Wicked and Craig, which was $20 more than the Herman Oak hides. I looked at the consistency, and they're just, they've been nothing but consistent for me in their color. And I looked at that extra $20, now $30. I don't know what Herman Oak sells their hides for anymore, but I think of that, and I think I just saved 3 hours on coloring and dyeing my hide. I saved my arms by like constantly rubbing it really hard to like basically polish it and burnish it and look pretty. So that was a big change for me. That was a huge leap. Cause I was going from a natural colored hide to dyed hides already that were drum dyed and at the factory. So that was a huge, huge step. So that was all, vegetable tanned leather. And then I agree with you, the chrome tanned leathers are really pliable for the most part. Any ones that I've gotten my hands on, that have just been super pliable and really hard to hand stitch. I think I could do more of that stuff now with my leather machine co sewing machine, but I don't know if I want to. I have been playing with the idea solely because people have a really hard time buying, you know, $300-$400 tote bags from me right now. I haven't sold a ton of them, because it's just like, it cost me $140 to make a tote. So it's insane.
And you can't sit. I mean, I don't know for you, I don't know what your finances are and it's none of my business, but I personally can't sit on any products that cost me $140. I have to guarantee that they're going to sell as soon as they're done. My strategy in how I sell my products is, I think, a bit unique, and I don't sit on inventory. We've discussed this multiple times, and I don't want to hog up too much airtime about it, but it makes no sense for me to, like you said, buy three different hides, because even if the color isn't different, the weight of it is going to be different for pockets on the inside of a tote bag in your case, or the pockets of, you know, the card pockets inside of a wallet. I usually use like a 2 ounce for those, 2 to 2.5 ounce, but the shell of my wallet is 4 to 5 ounces. So you're constantly having to buy multiple different hides to make one product. And to explain that to somebody that's just buying a product, it's impossible. And it's really, in my opinion, it's really none of their business. You either can or you can't at the price point that they want it. And you have to stand on your own too and explain, hey, that's not feasible to make that happen. Or yeah, I can do it. Or just eat the, you know, think of it as the product, the cost of the product is an investment, because you can still use all of the rest of the leather that you bought with the initial, you know, money that you got for the product. But man, I, to be honest with people, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, even a lot of the big names in leather, which I'm not claiming to be, but I know I'm in that ballpark. We're selling a product to make another product, if that makes sense. Like I can't just buy infinite hides, and I'm really fortunate because I have a sponsor, which cuts down on, you know, a couple thousand dollars every other month that I don't have to pay for. But not everyone is like that. Like I still have to sell a product to buy materials. That's just a fact. And you know, my experience with chrome tan, I think that there's still a place for it. I think that if you're going to put liners inside of tote bags, I think that that's a really cool thing. I've had this idea for a long time, and I'd still like to do it, where if you make a tote bag, you put a liner on the inside, like a tote bag specifically for like the beach or grocery shopping, and put like snaps at the top of it so you can pull the liner out and wash that. I'm not sure if people are doing this or not doing it, but they should be doing it, because then you could take out, even if you're not using leather, you're using some kind of like washable material, then you can wash the inside and you can still keep the leather, because you're not washing your leather. You're not actually, I don't think you can really disinfect a what's it called, a leather bag, but I think that there's still people, even mothers, that want a really nice what's it called, diaper bag. What better do you want than something that you could take out and wash real conveniently and then snap back in?
Yeah, that's a super good idea. That is a really good idea for sure.
That's a freebie for you, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks for that. I will have to put that one on the drawing board for sure. Noted. So to jump in where we left off with the different types of leathers. So that's kind of your really, really short run at vegetable tan versus like chrome tans. But the things that really frustrate me, and this is coming from personal experience where I'm a little bit passionate about it right now. Maybe a little bit too much. I'm a little bit bitter. I had a, and I'm not naming any names here, but I had a business that just did not really understand what they were getting. You know, they expect, because they're a big box store that I had a business deal with, they did not understand that as a little maker, you know, I don't have, you know, gobs and gobs of dollars to pick like the most like perfect looking beautiful piece of leather to use. They're expecting like something that rolled off the factory line that's just like, it's the same, every square inch is exactly the same. And that's not what you're getting with a natural product like vegetable tanned leather. And so I try not to like get too heated.
No, get heated. I love it.
I had 4 tote bags. So I'm a college student. I don't have a lot of money as it is. I made 4 beautiful sling bags that were made out of natural, I think it's pronounced vaqueta. I think some of our friends in our leatherworking community would be proud of me for calling it vaqueta versus like the American way of saying vachetta. But anyway, besides the point, I made these 4 beautiful totes that were not perfectly the same. No, you know, not one bag was the same as the next one. I sent 4 of them out there and they sent me pictures back of some inconsistencies and they said, we can't sell these. We want our money back. So they bought $1,000 worth of bags and they sent me the bags back, luckily, and asked for the money back. And it just, honestly, that set me back quite a bit in the leatherworking world. Like I bought my sewing machine with some of that money because I was like, okay, this is a great business deal. So it really bit me in the keister on that one. So my point is, I wish the big box stores that are purchasing stuff from maybe the little makers like us or people in general to know that natural products are going to have variation. Like they absolutely will. And if you don't expect that, then you're wrong. Like you're so wrong. You know, it's not genuine leather, which I'll mention here in a little bit, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. I think that's the beauty of what we make though, is the fact that it's handmade and not machine made or factory made, where there's one person that does one little portion of every single bag or wallet repetitively for, you know, 20 years in a factory and gets paid, you know, slave labor wages, you're naturally going to have minor inconsistencies. And in my opinion, that's the charm of what we do. And that's what kind of separates us from those big box stores, and something that I absolutely love. In that situation that you had, I probably would have been a little bit more aggressive and, you know, double checked the contract that I signed and made sure that, everything that you committed to was done correctly. And if it was, I would have told them to take you to court. And when you went in court, they paid court fees. And I know that like, I'm not somebody that is big on suing, but I don't mind getting sued because I'm confident in what I do, just like you were confident in what you did. And if there's a contract, then you fulfilled your contract. If there isn't a contract, you did what you agreed to. And I mean, I struggle with this too on a small scale with, you know, people that are upset. I recently had a situation where a law enforcement officer at the highest, like, global level, he's like Interpol, wanted to get a custom wallet from me and to fit his badge in that's super, super snug, that took me over a day just to do the cutout of where the badge would lay, because there's no gap, and you have to use a fingernail file to get it exactly. You're constantly placing the mock-up badge back and forth. And I got it done in a timely manner because, you know, like everyone, he's promising, oh, this is going to lead to a bunch of more business, like everyone does. It's what everyone says. But when he came to pick it up, the badge slot was upside down. So it would have been upside down when he showed it to people, which doesn't fly. But the example that he gave me to work off, the reference wallet that he had purchased that he didn't like, he left with me, and it was exactly the same way. And now he's like, oh, well, I need you to replace it. And I'm like, well, we're going to have to come up with a better solution than this, because I did what you asked me to do. And, you know, it's hard, man. It's hard. And we all go through it. And if nothing else, it teaches us to be a lot more focused on the fine print. And, you know, we have to chalk it up as learning lessons so that we don't get hung up on it and get jaded and push business away from us because the potential of things not going as planned, you know. And that's easy for me to say to you, Adam, when you're dealing with, you know, $1,000, you had to come out of pocket for the material cost to put those bags together. You made an investment in your company by buying that sewing machine. You thought that it was going to lead to more business in the future because we're all human and we all have these grandiose ideas and dreams of what one product could lead into for our future. I'm the same way. And it sucks at the end of the day, man. It's hard. I'm heartbroken for you.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that a lot. I did not know about your Interpol wallet not working out or the whole deal there. That really stinks. I'm sorry to hear that. But that thing, just from the pictures you were sending everybody, that looked really good. So I hope you get that squared away and figured out, because that would be super cool. Because that's right up your alley too, which is awesome.
Kind of a wizard when it comes to, and this is a great thing about hand stitching, I'm pretty good at like popping stitching, and I could flip that thing over and re-sew it. I'm gonna have to deconstruct the entire wallet, but I don't have to make the whole wallet over. I just need to sleep on it a couple nights, and all of a sudden, right before I'm about to fall asleep, my mind goes into math mode and like idea mode. Then I'm like, and this is a good tip too for people that are listening. If you're hung up on something on a project, just clean two things. Let it sit. Don't keep messing up your project. Just let it sit. It's going to be there the next day or even 2-3 hours away. The other tip that I would give you is completely clean your work area spotless, like the best you've cleaned it in 3 months. Like, go in and clean it. And then the next day when you come in, or the, you know, few hours after that, once you can clear your head, you come into a nice, clean workspace. It provides good flow state and you're able to concentrate on your fix of the project rather than things that are bothering you in your periphery. Maybe it's, you know, leather dust, or maybe it's, you know, whatever the million things that they dirty up our workshops. We all know what they are, and we all know what our irritability is when we are working in a dirty shop. And I think I might be a little bit unique in the sense that, like, I'm hyper clean. Like, when I'm done with a particular portion of a project, I clean everything. Then I do the next part, and then I do the next part, and I do the next part. But clean your station, you'll be happier for doing it.
You know, that's a really good point of taking a step back and potentially like just letting it out of your mind completely for a little bit and then coming back and reanalyzing. Because at the end of the day, we're all creative and we're going to come up with solutions. And even if we don't, that's okay too. But taking a step back, getting your mind on something entirely different, your mind will naturally come back to that and you're going to find the solution. So yeah, doing that and then cleaning your station too and coming back to that clean station as well with those distractions, minimizing those. I think that's a really good point that you bring up there.
It's such a key. Well, Adam, I'm sweating completely and I'm ready to go jump in the pool. Like, I don't know if you can see it from your angle, but I got beads of sweat dripping down my face and it's that time. I want to thank you personally for taking time out of your busy schedule, being a student, being, you know, a leathersmith. Do you mind doing me two favors? If there's anything that you want to leave the audience with, any little bit of advice that you may have to share with new leathersmiths, as well as people that have been doing it a while. Also, if you could plug yourself, tell people where they can go to support you, whether that's your Instagram, Facebook, Shopify, Spotify, OnlyFans, whatever it is, wherever people can find you.
Yeah. I don't know if I necessarily have any advice for the makers that have been doing this for a while, but for the new ones, for sure. Absolutely do it. And if you're listening to this podcast and haven't even started yet, and are like on the fence of whether or not you need to do it, just do it. I took an entire year of just doing research and thinking maybe I should do it or maybe not. Just think and do it. Like, it is so worth it. It's such a fulfilling thing to do. And I guess it not even necessarily pertains to leatherworking, but if there's something that you have been wanting to do for a while or afraid of the initial cost or just anything in general, just do it. Like, we, at the end of the day, you know, time is short here on earth. We need to be doing things that are fulfillment or that are fulfilling in our lives that are going to just keep us rolling. And you know, our mental health is a big thing.
Massive.
And so massive. Getting into these things that we really enjoy doing, in turn, you're going to be a better person for it. So
I think that's super true. And I think that there's something I want to touch on just really, really quickly. I know in this podcast, we've been name dropping really, really nice leather, like Horween, like Wicked and Craig, like all of these different things. And it might be overwhelming and it might seem out of reach because the price tags on these things. You have to remember that me and Adam do this as a business. And just like any business, you gradually work up to better and better products, materials. When both Adam and I started, I'm sure that we did not start off using the best of absolutely anything. But don't let that discourage you from starting. It's a lot cheaper to learn and pay your dues with a cheaper material and move your way up, because as you get better at using the cheaper materials into something that's a little bit more fancy, and then a little bit more fancy, you're going to appreciate every step on that ladder as you go up that ladder, because you'll be able to appreciate the quality difference from getting a panel for, you know, 30, 40 bucks off of Amazon compared to spending, you know, $400 or $500 on a piece of shell cordovan. Like, those are the two extremes. Start off, you know, get in where you fit in. Get what you can. If there's someone in your family or your friends or whatever that have old, rusty, junky leather tools, start with those. Don't make excuses. Just start, like you said.
That's, you know, that's a really good point. And one thing that I would like to do, and hopefully it doesn't get too overwhelming, but if people do have questions, and granted, I'm new at this too, but for those that are listening, if you are trying to get into this and are just completely confused. And we didn't answer the questions that you have in your mind, reach out
either
to me.
One of us.
I'm happy to. Yeah. Dennis is he's going to go above and beyond, the capability that I have for sure when it comes to getting you into the right direction and plugging in and getting you into the passion that we both have. So yeah, please reach out if you have any questions on that kind of stuff. We'll be happy to answer those to the best of our ability. And if we can't, we'll point you in the right direction. That's the beauty of this community. And we are happy to have you. So please join in. You can find me on my Instagram. It's just called Beck and Loon. That is B-E-C-K and Loon, like the bird, the common loon. It's part of the reason why I named my company, because I love loons. And then you can find me at the same at beckandloon.com, which is on my Instagram. And then if you have neither one of those, well, you should have internet if you're looking at a website. But Facebook I have as well, and that is Beck and Loon. So those are my three websites that you can reach me at. My contact information is on my website if you have questions there, as well as on Facebook and Instagram too. So shoot me a message on Instagram if you need something. So feel free to reach out if you're interested in my products or just genuinely have questions about the leatherworking craft. So please reach out. Happy to entertain any question you have within reason, within context, of course, but definitely happy to have you in the community.
Awesome. Thank you so, so very much, Adam. Thank you for doing this podcast, taking time out of your busy day. Also, thank you personally for your friendship and the encouragement and, taking time to ask me about myself too. I really appreciate it. And, I'm super grateful. And, thank you, man. We're going to wrap up this episode now. I'm sweating, man. I am sweating. So with that said, thank you guys for, thank you guys for, tuning in. If you've made it this far, please do me a favor. Go to the portion where you could share this podcast, send it to a couple of your friends. We're trying to grow it as much as we can. And we need your help. So this is our call to arms. Also, if you have recommendations for people that you would like on this podcast, even if that's you, that includes you, then reach out to me through my Instagram. I'm super easy to find as well. It's 21grams_leathergoods or 21grams_teaches. I do a lot of educational stuff as well. So, and same as Adam said, if you guys need help and it's something that I don't provide through one of my courses, then I'm willing to help. If it's a quick question and I can lead you in the right direction, I'm going to do everything I can to get more people within this community. A lot of people say that it is flooded, but I don't think it's flooded enough. I think that there's still room for everyone, and we don't have to gatekeep because no one likes a gatekeeper. So, with that said, thank you for tuning in to your favorite podcast centered around the makers community. And until next week, we'll see you later.
Way back a year ago.